Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. I will say as an opening preamble that I know that you have just come back from watching the Avengers movie. And so, you know, I'm sure as a service, you're not going to say anything about it to affect our listeners, who many of whom may not have seen it. But most importantly, because I haven't seen it yet.
No spoilers.
All right. Good. Okay.
Unless so, you consider... No, it's a movie. There's credits at the end.
I have to be on this podcast.
Yes, I'm making you. No, it's a movie that I saw at 7 a.m. I went to a 7 a.m. screening, folks. 7 a.m. 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 That's the morning one. Yeah, the morning one.
I got about 24 hours left before I get there, but it's I'm going to try. This is the gauntlet. I'm running that last, the Infinity Gauntlet. This last 24 hours.
Oh, I saw what you did there. Yeah, 7 a.m. Because they tried to get to 3 hour long movie, so they stretched it out, and that meant that they showed it at 7 a.m. And you know what? I wasn't the only one in the theater. There was like 15 people there. 7 a.m. I laughed as I was pulling in the movie theater. There's a guy walking in the front door, and I'm like, okay, it's not just me. And then there was like 8 cars in the parking lot. So yeah. Yeah, but I got
maybe
to see it on our...
Maybe there to see other movies. Who knows?
I got to see it on our... we have the single screen movie theater. So
okay.
It's the only movie at that theater.
It's a good choice for them to be playing that one and not some other movie that opens this weekend.
That's unfortunate. Yeah, I think our shopping mall movie theater is playing it at, like, on every screen. Because it's... The times, it's like, would you like to go at 8 or 8:30 or 9 or 9:30 or 10? Like, wow. Okay. But yes, I'm not gonna say anything about it. In fact, instead, I wanted to say welcome to the dark side, Dan. Now you've joined me, and we can rule the galaxy as two guys who write at sixcolors.com. I gotta work on my evil eye. And what I'm saying is, this week at Macworld, I wrote a story about how, honestly, there are times when I use the Finder and I go, oh, yeah, this isn't good. Like, iOS has kind of ruined me for the Finder a little bit. And I thought, wow, this is gonna make people unhappy. And I did get a text from our friend John Gruber, who was like, so I guess we're enemies now. Like, yeah, okay. But then I look this morning as I leave my movie that I went to at 7 a.m.
Jason, hold my beer.
And you said, hey, touchscreen Macs, just make them happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been on that train for a little while, but I really hadn't gotten like a full-throated argument as to why I think they should make them. But I really do. I find it a little perplexing that of all the innovations that iOS has made, the biggest one is I think it's hard to argue it's not multi-touch. That multi-touch changed the way that we interacted with our devices and has become the default like way that we interact with so many of our devices these days. And it's the one thing that Apple staunchly refuses
on one
to
platform,
bring to the Mac.
Right? Touchscreen Windows, touchscreen Android, touchscreen iOS, touchscreen Chromebooks.
And
Apple refuses.
So many other things that you use. Like, it's not just our phones and our tablets, but so many places that we interact with touchscreens, whether it be ATMs or payment terminals, you know, at checkout machines or whatever. Like, we're just used to tapping on screens. And why is the Mac the outlier there? Like, why is it the one device where it's like, no, we cannot, you know, infect it with this touch interface? Seems puzzling to me.
And the influx of iOS apps that are coming this fall really does.
Exactly.
It raises the question at last, right? Which is, why would you take touch-first apps and bar them from using touch on
especially
the
for
Mac?
Things like games. And like, as I sort of made as an aside point in that article, like, Apple's building a whole service around games and around a very specific type of game as well, right? Like games that are invested in the ecosystem and like make the iOS ecosystem look really good and do sort of interesting, innovative things. And a lot of those require or really work best with touchscreen in a sort of a visceral way that if you translate to a trackpad and a keyboard, I think you'll lose something, right? Like Monument Valley, for example, just to throw it out there, like, I don't know, it's not that touch is central to it, but it makes it immersive in a way that I think a keyboard, mouse, game would not really be. And it's not even the best example of that. I'm sure there are way better examples of touchscreen control. So I think I agree with you. You know, the Marzipan stuff that's going to come starting this year, and I believe there will be a lot of it, because Apple is clearly shooting at making that as easy as possible for iOS developers. So I think we're going to see a lot of that starting this year and well into the next year. And I am slightly puzzled that they wouldn't even think about making a touchscreen Mac. Maybe they are. Maybe that is something that is going to happen.
Maybe they are. Maybe even, you know, we'll see one this year. It's possible if they're doing a new generation of laptops and they're bringing iOS apps to the Mac, that this would be the next generation of laptops would be touchscreen laptops. And it's not like they aren't good at building touchscreens, as you said.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's laundry. My laundry is going in the background. It's very exciting. I know there are people who really, it's like the ASMR, I don't know, kind of version of a podcast.
It'd be great if you guys could just stop talking so I could just listen to laundry. That'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, it's spinning. I don't even know what's in there, because I was at the movies when
hopefully
laundry. Spoilers for my laundry. No. But I snapped my fingers and half of my laundry got clean, which is terrible because the other half is still dirty. Anyway, I said in the Six Color Slack, and this has just like been my take on it for a while now, ever since Jamie used a Chromebook for a long time, is when you have a touchscreen laptop, you keep your pointing devices. They don't take your trackpad away. They don't take your mouse away. And you only have to touch the screen when it's convenient. A lot of times people make this argument that is like the worst case scenario argument. And it's like, you can't have A, because if A happened and was done badly, then it would be bad. And it's like, wait. And was done badly is not part of the argument.
Those are two conditions.
Because I don't believe that Apple would ever make the Mac basically require a touchscreen to do anything. Adding a touchscreen to the Mac does not mean touchscreen only. And I will tell you, having used that Chromebook some myself, which is my experience with a touchscreen laptop, although I also, you know, put the iPad in a touchscreen laptop configuration, having a traditional pointing device and a touchscreen together is great. That's why I want pointing device support on iOS. And I want touchscreens on the Mac, because then you can just choose the right one for the right situation. And I will tell you, scrolling web pages with your finger is better than going arrow, 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 or spacebar. It's better. Yeah. Or two fingers on the trackpad is nice, but sometimes I would find myself touching my Safari screen when I was using a laptop, and I'd be like, right, I can't do that. Or like, there's a big button to tap, or I want to pause YouTube, and I'm like, I could use a keyboard shortcut or move the mouse over and press and click, or I could just go tap and it would be paused.
Pinching to zoom is the one that gets me. Is like, oh, that's so much better. I mean, it works in certain places in certain ways on the Mac, but it's not really well implemented.
We're all trained, and a whole new generation of people is trained to use fingers on glass like that. And like, again, part of my problem with it is that a lot of people who don't like it are like, I would never use that. I'm like, who cares then? Don't use it.
It's not going to hurt you in any way.
They're not going to make you, right? Like, that's what I keep coming back to, is it's not like they're going to say, oh, sorry, you just can't do this app unless you use a touchscreen. Because first off, there are going to be lots of Macs that don't have touchscreens for a long time, if ever, because as long as there's like external devices, there will probably be non-touchscreen Macs. And I don't see it happening, because it is not an ideal interaction method. It is one of a bunch of interaction methods.
Oh, Jason, I've just come up with the Apple ad for this. Like, so Apple's been doing these more humorous ads lately with like lots of actors and stuff in them, which I really enjoy. And I've pictured in my head, it's just a lot of people like walking, you know, people like hunched over a computer or whatever, and one of them will reach out to like point at something on the screen, and the other person will be like, oh no, don't touch the screen, don't touch the screen. And you'll have like six or seven of those, and then somebody will touch the screen and it will like, you'll show it like scrolling or something like that, and they'll be like, oh, I can touch the screen. And that's it. That's the Apple ad.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
I do that
with when I have that bridge keyboard, and I'm somewhere with other tech journalists, and I reach up and I touch the screen, and they all do a double take, like, wait, what just happened? I'm like, oh yeah, this is an iPad. I can do that. But
that's the thing for me is like, I still, despite having an iPad and using it a lot, I still feel more at home on a Mac for a lot of things. And
sure.
I like the fact that my MacBook Air, the 11-inch Air, is so close to an iPad in size and weight. Like, it's not like I'm debating, do I take my iPad mini or my 15-inch MacBook Pro, right? Like, I've got things that are fairly close, and so a lot of times I opt for the computer just because I know I won't feel like I have to make any compromises with it. But that is one place where I feel like it does fall short. And it's like, especially if I'm going to replace this laptop soon, which I'm starting to think I might need to because the battery is going, among other things. I want something that's pushing things forward, not something that just feels like the same old computer. And I feel like that's a dimension, a place where it could be headed, is like adding this touch interface. So that appeals to me. It really does. I didn't think it would, but, and I think I, you know, to a certain point, I've listened to the arguments Apple has made sort of tacitly about it over the years. Like, oh, you don't want the toaster fridge, right? But I think that, you know, I agree with you. The idea that they would just slap it in and make it bad is kind of a weird foregone conclusion to take when you don't really have a lot of evidence to back that up.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I want to roll in here the other part of this, which is that last week on Connected, Federico dropped the bombshell that he's known for a while that, from his mysterious sources, that Apple is working on putting external pointer device support in iOS. This with iOS 13, probably in accessibility, so probably off by default, but you could turn it on. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where, I mean, it has to be implemented well, and I'm not going to assume that it's going to be implemented poorly just so that I don't want it. I do want it, but I also want it implemented well. But, like, that opens up the other side of this, which is, if I'm using an external keyboard and have to reach up every time I want to scroll something on iOS, that's no good either. Like, that's no good either. Plus, so I was thinking, like, it means that I got the new Bridge keyboard, one of the early first ones off the assembly line kind of units to review, and it's great. And then this report comes out, and I think, oh man, they need to make one of these with a trackpad in it, which they actually do for Surface.
Oh, really?
The Microsoft Surface, they actually make one with a trackpad, and there's a trackpad space there, and then there's just nothing in it. It's just like a wrist rest, because they're using, I think, some of the same geometry that they do for some of their other keyboards for other devices. But, like, I want that. I want an external keyboard with trackpad, and certainly it means that it opens up to really wacky scenarios, like, you know, Federico's using an iPad Pro with a 4K display, which it supports, but it's you know, it's mirrored. So he can type and look at the 4K display.
But he can't touch anything.
But then he has to, like, reach up to the desktop where he's got his iPad laying flat and then tap on things on that screen, which is weird. But, you know, these apps that are coming to the Mac are coming to iOS too, right? They're iOS apps. They're going to be modified maybe to be more Mac-like. But, you know, if you could do external pointing device support, at that point, you could really plug in a monitor and have apps running on it from an iPad. And that's also kind of, like, really wacky and far out. And yet it just brings these devices closer together, where, and what Apple's really saying is, what shape device you want? What scenarios do you have? Are you know, we've got hardware that's powerful enough to handle all of them. And I love the Mac, but I also would love the idea, since Apple's never going to make a tablet Mac, right? That they're never going to do that. Presumably, they're never going to do that. But they make an iPad that's got the power of a laptop, and, you know, and gives you that flexibility. It's like, great, let's do that too. I want my iPad to be more like a Mac when I want it to be, and I want my Mac to be more like an iPad when I want it to be. And that's just about choice. And the Mac OS issue especially is the weird one, where, you know, it's just, they, as you pointed out, they have been resistant. And I have to wonder if this marzipan moment we're in now is the moment where that resistance finally cracks, and they're like, all right, you got touchscreen support on.
Yeah, and it's one of the interesting things. We've talked about this a bunch because I think it is sort of the most interesting question going as far as Apple's concerned, which is, you know, you talk about apps that run on both platforms. You talk about bringing pointing devices to iOS and touchscreens to the Mac. We've also talked about, like, app, you know, Macs running on ARM chips. Like, there is a point, and this is sort of the boogeyman for a lot of people, right? This idea that these will merge. And I think we've made arguments against that, but, like, there is a point where it becomes almost a distinction without a difference, right? Yeah. Like, what is going to be maintained that will keep these as separate products? And I guess more than ever, I start to think that, yeah, okay, I can see down the road something that's going to be neither quite a Mac nor an iOS device, possibly, but shares a lot of the same underlying characteristics. I don't know exactly what that is, but it does seem like the distinction between these two platforms becomes less and less. And maybe that is like sort of the boiling the frog moment of, oh, I've been using a Mac all this time, or I've been using an iPad all this time and didn't realize it. I don't know. I'm kind of curious. I don't think this is something that happens soon, but like there are a lot of things that do move them much closer together. And at least if nothing else, make life easier for Apple in terms of maintaining these two separate platforms.
Yeah. Also, I think, well, definitely something that people don't talk about a lot that they definitely said at WWDC is this idea that they've spent the last year or two, I think as part of Marzipan, aligning all the stuff that's like the low level stuff that had kind of drifted apart and getting it back together so that like the low level stuff on Mac on iOS, they want to be the same. And then they can move it forward in lockstep, which means that there's a big chunk of Mac and iOS. They're not merging, but they are in parallel. And right. I do think there's an argument that, well, so Apple's argument seems to be, well, the Mac, you know, it's hard to square the we love the Mac and we love our pro users thing that they did last year.
Right.
With this vision that people have of Apple locking down every corner of these devices so that there is no more control and they are sandboxing everything and users don't have the access to the hardware than they used to. And it's interesting because, yes, control is part of Apple's history and track record. Some of that is about being a control freak. Some of it is about security and wanting to lock things down so that it's a better user experience for people. But, you know, the pro argument goes against that. And I think I see that push and pull happening in the conversation now. And it strikes me like saying that desktops and laptops are pro, except when they're not, and that tablets, and this is my own perspective here, that tablets are not, which they absolutely are, because they literally have a product called iPad Pro that has all the power of a laptop. So that seems to be the wrong distinction to me. And I'm spitballing here, but I'm just going to throw it out there that to bring up Chrome OS, for example, Chrome OS has a developer mode that lets you do all sorts of crazy stuff that is not enabled in standard Chrome OS. And I wonder if we have these conversations about like, oh, well, it turns out that there's not a lot of difference between the Mac and iOS other than the hardware you happen to be running it on. There comes a time when you say, well, are you going to lock it down so nobody can install software like from the terminal or from, so like scripts and compile software and all that, like we accept in Xcode? Well, that seems unlikely. Like you do need to let these things be development machines or power user machines. And then on iOS, like why would you prevent the iPad from being able to do that too? I think there's an assumption right now that iOS will never get a terminal, never get a command line because only right. the Mac will have that. And it's like, or maybe, but it strikes me that that's the wrong place to draw the line. And that if Apple draws the line there, it's stupid. Honestly, it's a bad move. The right move is to get to a point where they say, all right, we're going to lock out command line, terminal, you know, whatever it is on Mac OS. It's already not there on iOS. But if you go into developer mode, which will be off by default and you lose all the security when you do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you can turn it on and have access to all that stuff on either platform.
Right. Right.
Right.
And then
it's all about user choice. It's like if I want to run shell scripts on iOS, you should let me, right? You should let me. Why should I only be able to do that on a laptop and not on an iPad? Doesn't make sense.
Not like you said, like it's not like it's not there, right? And in fact, there has been that ISH app floating around for a while,
which is a shell environment. It's like a virtual machine. And we talked about the idea that Apple could provide a sandboxed shell space if they wanted to. And maybe that's
how they, another option.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
the way
there's choices.
I don't know.
There's choices.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't. Yeah, there's a lot of things that we do on the Mac that I don't know that I would do on my iOS device, just
sure.
because my, like, I like having a little bit of a safety net there. I can't screw anything up too badly.
Well, if you think about
yeah,
with,
at the same time.
With T2 devices, there's Safe Boot, right? And you can turn Safe Boot off. And I think that's not a bad model, which is, by default, it checks the operating system, and if things aren't signed and all of that, it just won't boot. But you can turn it off. It's your computer. If you turn it off, you are opening yourself up to malware and hacking and all sorts of scary things. But if you're a professional, go ahead and do it. And if you're not, then don't do it. And if you do it and you pay for it, it's kind of your fault, which is not great. It's a you break it, you bought it. But, you know, it's like these stories about malware on the Mac, where it turns out that all the malware on the Mac is from people who were downloading or malware on iOS. It was like shocking malware on iOS.
Oh,
yeah, it's
all
jailbreak.
Right.
It's all jailbreak stuff. And then everybody shrugs and is like, well, you know, it's your fault because
that's
you did
what
that.
You're going to get. Yeah. You,
right?
I mean, you're working without a net at that point. And
so then you can leave it on unless you really want that stuff. If you're like, you know, my iOS experience, I don't need a command line over there. It's fine. Just you leave it off and you're happy. That's great.
Right.
I think that's okay. Yeah. That's another part of a lot of these arguments is there's this like, I don't want them to do that because I wouldn't use it. And it's like, well, who cares? If it's off by default, who cares?
And I think you made the point correctly that the idea that they're going to lock everything down doesn't really jibe with the whole, like, we've invested all this time in making super powerful iMacs,
right?
iMac Pros, Mac Pros, Mac Minis that are really configurable. Like,
how do you, how do
they
you
are targeting
get those,
a professional market?
Those two apples, how do they exist on the same platform? And I think the answer is lockdown by default, open as an option. And at that point, I think it is worth asking that question. Why not? Why wouldn't you do the same on iOS? Really, in the end, why wouldn't you do that?
Right. And right now there are, especially I think because it gives them a certain degree of, it's not quite plausible deniability, but like it is that whole issue, this thing that they've run into over the past few months with, you know, companies that use enterprise development certificates to make an end run around the App Store.
Right.
Like, to a certain extent, you kind of, there is that ability now to have sort of things that do circumvent certain protections.
For sure.
And so at that point, there is sort of a, you know, like you said, a Pottery Barn rule about it. Like, yeah, you can do that, but like you're going to have, if you run into problems, they're kind of on your own. So I think not exactly legitimizing that, but at least having some option of, all right, you don't have to remain entirely locked down all the time on iOS strikes me as one that makes sense. There's been a lot of talk too about, I thought I had seen something in the last few months about locking down macOS further,
mm-hmm.
like upping Gatekeeper and kind of what it did in subsequent versions. I'm not sure if happening. But
there's this thing that they're going to do, and I think it might be this fall. There's this thing that they're working on, which is the notarized apps things, which is basically like you can still release apps outside the App Store, but Apple wants to issue you a certificate, and that gives Apple the ability to do some scanning of your app and do some, you know, stop this from running, kind of revocation should your app choose, you know, turn out to be malware.
Right.
So it's like, approval outside of the App Store, kind of. And my understanding is, again, that I think you're going to be able to turn that off, but it's on by default
right.
at some point here, that everything is going to have to be notarized. And, you know, people view that, if they want to, as being Apple is escalating this thing where they're going to lock down the entire platform and take complete control over it, and you won't be able to do anything without Apple's approval. I look at it and say, Apple seems to be investing a lot of work into letting people distribute software off the Mac App Store.
Right.
And when they could just lower the gate and say, sorry, Mac App Store only. And they're not doing that. Like, they're putting effort into being outside.
Right. They're creating,
why would they do that?
Structures, right? Like, yeah, like you said, investing time and energy in something when they could just easily flip a switch and say, Mac App Store or bust.
Right, right.
Yeah,
so why,
no,
yeah, why create notarized apps when you could just say by default Mac App Store, and you can turn that off if you want? And they're like, no, we're going to make this thing where this stuff outside the store, is also kind of like has some of those protections, just like Gatekeeper was having some of those protections where you could, you could allow signed apps. Signed apps are not notarized apps in the sense that signed apps, you only need, I believe this is how this works, you only need to have a registered developer account, and then you can sign the apps yourself. Yeah. Notarized apps, you actually send the app to Apple, and Apple signs it, which means that Apple has a per app kill switch instead of a per developer kill switch. Right. But that bothers developers because they don't like the idea that to release a new version of their non-App Store software, they have to send something to Apple and wait for it to turn around and be approved, because that's one of the reasons you aren't in the Mac App Store is you want faster turnaround. Right, and Apple has said they're working very hard to get that turnaround to be fast by the time they demand it. But it goes back to, I think, the points we're both making here, which is there is this weird split of Apple wanting some control and wanting to lock stuff down, and Apple saying they understand the needs of pro users. And I look at it and say, if they really didn't want to do this, they wouldn't be doing it. Like they right. are taking those steps, and that encourages me that they might just, this might be the bigger picture, is they're going to lock a lot of stuff down by default, and then there will be a release valve.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it seems to me that what they prioritize there more than anything is security, which is obviously sure. what they spend a lot of time working on the Mac.
And the more locked down it is, even if you like tinkering with your system, the more locked down it is, the more secure it is. And that gives people the ability to make it less secure if they want, but it's not insecure by default. And I think that's right. I think where the, like, I'm a believer that as long as I have the ability to unlock my system to do whatever the heck I want with it, I am fine with it being completely locked down at default, because I can change the defaults, and most users don't. And I think most users should experience a completely locked down, secure system, because most users do dumb stuff, and I would rather they be locked prevented from doing dumb stuff where bad actors are trying to get them to install bad software and stuff like that. Just lock it down. And if you know what you're doing, you unlock it. And Apple, like, puts the tools in there. This isn't like subverting Apple. It's literally Apple's like, yeah, flip these switches, know what's going to happen, and you're good. That's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Right. And I want that on iOS too, to be honest, which is, again, I know there are ramifications for that, but I think in the end, Apple doesn't really have a leg to stand on to say, if you want a computer of this particular shape, some features will be omitted for no real reason. And I think that's where we're going to get in the next 5 years with Apple's hardware, is that it's all going to be pretty similar in a bunch of different ways. And if the only differentiator on the Mac is that it's some shapes and it's these pro features, I kind of want the pro features on the other shapes too. Unless they do make a Mac tablet, which is the other possibility here, is that eventually this thing goes down the line so far where there are iOS apps on the Mac and the Mac handles touch really well. At that point, they could make a tablet that is a Mac, and the difference between it and an iPad is largely in some of the defaults and some of the power.
Is it like, yeah, is it just the windowing system and the Finder at that point? I don't even know.
I have joked before, and yet I'm also partially serious, that when they make the move to ARM for Macs, that the first thing they will announce at WWDC when they announce that is that you'll be able to install it on your iPad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because we already are shipping an ARM Mac, everybody. Get it? It's the iPad Pro.
Right.
And it's like, what? But they could. I'm not sure if that's the hardware configuration they want for ARM Macs it is a powerful ARM computer that they're already shipping, that you could potentially install something on it. And that, I think that's the weird place where we're going is, and I wonder if Mac users will feel this way or not. Like, in the end, if these two things are more similar, does it matter if it's called a Mac if it can do everything you want? The danger is that people will lose stuff that they're familiar with, and I get that, but I'm more concerned that we can still do what we need to do at the end of the day than I am about some of the details of how we get there. But this does require Apple to have this approach where you can unlock it if you're a power user and lock it down if you're not.
Yeah, I'm on board with it. I feel like I use a lot of devices, and while there are different things that they're good at, I would also be okay having fewer devices.
Yeah,
So, yeah, there's an appeal to that.
I mean, if you like the iPad and the laptop, and you can now suddenly not just not take both of them and do everything you can do on one of them,
and
then great.
Feel comfortable with the device that I'm taking. And like,
that's
I
not the case with the iPad right now.
It's not the way I feel with the iPad right now. No. Like, I still travel with my MacBook Air if I'm going anywhere, like, long-term. And I will sometimes go out and just take the iPad with me if I'm like, I need to go write a column, and that is all I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Totally sure. Fine. It is really good for that.
Yeah,
but
I love that.
It is not as good for doing other stuff. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But I gotta go. I actually like my stop right after this. The long we're talking about iPads is I gotta go to the Genius Bar because I have a weird thing that I discovered yesterday with my iPad where it's got these flickering lines on it that are only visible in. It's very peculiar. Like, I was sitting in a coffee shop, and I was like, wow, it seems like there are some flickering lines on this display. Maybe there's, like a fan behind me, like a ceiling fan, and there's, like, a light behind it. That's kind of what it looks like, where you get, like, that oscillation because the fan is going through, you know, past the light really fast. And then I checked it in a couple things, and I Googled around, and I found somebody else who had run into the exact same problem. Something in the, like, backlights or something is freaking out. And so what was very funny was yesterday... last night I was trying to show it to Kat to see, like, I'm not crazy, right? Like, you can see these lines. And at first I couldn't see them, and I realized, oh, you know why? Night shift is on, and it changed the color temperature just enough that it was not visible. I turned it off, and you could see them again. And I was like, this is a very weird problem, and I have no idea what's happening here, but I highly suspect it is some sort of bizarre hardware failure thing. And the fact that somebody else has run into it does sort of back up that assertion to me. Very strange. Anyways, we'll see what happens.
Well, good
see
luck
if they kick me out or not.
Good luck to you on that one.
Thank you.
All right, well, I think we're gonna wrap it up there. No spoilers. See, I didn't do any spoilers.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's right. Well, enjoy the movie, and thanks to everybody out there. Enjoy that movie if you're gonna go see it too. And we're gonna talk about it on The Incomparable next week, by the way. So that's next week. Next weekend, there are two episodes we're gonna do with different panels about that movie. And if you don't like that movie or don't care about it, that's fine. Everybody else is gonna be talking about it, and you'll just be sitting there going, whatever. And that's fine too. It's all good. All right. Thanks for being subscribers, and thanks for listening to this ridiculous podcast. The laundry's done. I got to move it into the dryer now, Dan. Bye.
Okay. Bye.